Hi, this is Grant Cameron, and you're listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. My name is Andy, and for a busy few days of UFO UAP news, I've got Dan joining me for a chat. Dan, how are we?
I'm great, thank you. Nothing happens and then it all happens, right? It just always happens.
Yeah, it seems in the last kind of 24, 48 hours, there have been at least three major stories that are all sort of linked together as well. I've noticed as I was kind of making notes and reading through them, They probably flow into each other quite nicely. So I thought it was a good chance for us to smash through and have a chat. And to be fair, Dan, as we're recording this, it's the 18th of April, it's evening time in the UK. We've both had busy days. I've caught quite a lot of it, same as yourself. A lot of this is still kind of developing, and a lot of conversation around the news is still developing too. So there may be a few things, even as we speak about it, something else comes out tomorrow or someone confirms something. But yeah, it's been a pretty interesting couple of days. If you don't mind, we're going to start with the latest UAP caucus briefing. There was a skiff held on the Hill in Washington. If you're brand new to the podcast or brand new to UFOs, the last year or so, skiffs have been all the rage. Top secret classified meetings where security clearances are all the rage, and congressmen and women and other individuals go into a room locked away and are told top secret stuff, namely UFOs on this occasion. Dan, again, we have the usual cast of characters involved from a political point of view. We have representatives Eric Burleson, Anna Paulina Luna, Tim Burchett, and is it Andy Ogles? Yeah.
That's right, yeah.
And others were involved in this as
How
well.
How did you forget the guy that has your name?
I wanted to call him Matt Ogles, but it's not Matt.
It's on the weekend.
Yeah. Andy Ogles. It sounds like a nickname more than an actual name, but no offense to anyone who he is your representative. But yeah, these folks are all on the side of UAP, UFO transparency. That's what they've been saying. They've been pushing for it now for some time. And I don't think we should forget that they also have other political aspirations, careers, things to go after on a daily basis. So this is something that they are picking up and trying to push forward. Big shout out to Matt Laszlo from Askapol, who was there on the doorsteps chasing them down as soon as they came out the skiff. Just by the very nature of a skiff, you're not going to hear what was said within the skiff because you're not allowed. Like I say, it's classified. However, some of the comments from afterwards, Dan, I'm going to start off with Representative Eric Burleson. He was grabbed by Matt Laszlo from Askapol. And this is probably one of the more, if you're UFO friendly, which you almost definitely will be or should be listening to this, slightly disappointing, but we'll start with the more disappointing comment. He said to Matt Laszlo, this is Representative Eric Burleson, to be candid about information, I think that the goal is to demystify, because what we don't want to see is that programs that are secure, that have nothing to do with extraterrestrials or anything like that, you don't want activity in those programs being exposed. I'm going to paraphrase slightly. And so they want, because of that, if there's any commission, they want to get it out. And my worldview has been very sceptical that this is extraterrestrial, and that remains sceptical. There's nothing that I learned today. In fact, I'm probably more validated today. Matt Laszlo asks Representative Burleson, you know, that your skepticism is validated. And he says, yeah. So from that point of view, Burleson said he feels they got some really good answers off the back of it. You can't attack him for feeling that way. He's come into this relatively open-minded as much as he can be, and he feels, do you know what, I'm skeptical this is anything ET, and he's come out of it saying I think that's justified. Fair comment though, isn't it? That's his opinion.
Yeah, and this is what we want, right? Is people coming to the table neutrally and hearing the information and then deciding what it is. And you'll notice that we're in that area again between he's saying it's not ET. There are so many other things it could be that aren't just human-made craft. So he might be feeling validated that it's not ET, but he could be feeling validated that it's not in towards something else. And again, we've discussed this before, even if it's foreign technology, it could be using the technology from these UAP programs that are running on foreign soil. So it's not clear-cut, you know, us or them, but I'm glad that he keeps coming to the table and doing so with an open mind.
Yeah, and we've got to remember, it's not as if you've got the Men in Black, you've not got Tommy Lee Jones and Will Smith turning up, delivering these skiffs and saying, here's some really cool videos of UFOs, but it's actually a drone. I don't think that's what happened. Tim Burchett was pretty annoyed, and he came out with Luna and Ogles afterwards. And when Matt Laszlo asked him, you know, his thoughts, he was so frustrated, he just said, ask her. He didn't even want to talk about it, you know, speak to Luna. And he said, there's no reason that any of that needed to be told in a skiff. Luna used the phrase we all hate, but nothing burger, nothing burger, as she would say. And you know, there's nothing to this. It was just a total waste of our time. Representative Andy Ogles, he said it was nothing other than to get us to not talk about it. So there's three senior politicians who are, they feel that they're being danced around here, that they're being given the basics. They want to go in there and get a real high class meal, and they're being served the poorest starter on the menu. They're getting bread with no butter, deliberately, which they feel that, again, and this is your congressmen and women, but I don't think at this point, if you've listened to the podcast for any length of time or had an interest in the UFO subject for any length of time, this shouldn't be a surprise. Just because the heads of state, congressmen and women, senators, are asking for information, there's nothing to show that any government's going to give them the information they want, really, is there? Especially when it comes to a topic like this, shrouded in secrecy for 80 plus years now. I don't think it was massively outside the realms of, they're just paying them lip service.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've got Burchett here. He brings up the fact that the legislation wasn't good enough to stop something like this happening. He alludes that his legislation would have been better. It wouldn't have been. The same thing would have happened. Like you said, it's the government deciding, or sorry, not to say the government, a specific department in the government deciding, we're only going to share limited information. They clearly didn't get kind of the data they were expecting or hoping, and the transparency they were hoping for. And it sounds like they're real frustrated. And now we're in a position where Congress seems to not have faith in a program that was legislated into existence by Congress. So we're kind of at a stalemate here now, right? Where everyone's just fed up. They don't have faith in the actual institution. The institution is saying, hey, we're being completely honest, but no one believes them. The whistleblowers are saying that they don't trust them. So we're at this kind of stalemate again, where we're kind of wondering, you know, what's Arrow even for anymore if they're not going to be transparent with the very people who brought it into existence?
100%. A few more comments from them. Burchett says they need a president who says to release it all. I've seen some folks online saying he means Trump. I don't know if he does or doesn't. He is Republican, but there's nothing to say Trump would release it all. Trump had 4 years in office and didn't release everything. Anything.
What
really.
I would add there is just that, so Marco Rubio, who's been very UAP friendly, is being tipped to VP. Be Trump's running mate for vice president.
Yeah.
So that might be an interesting development if it happens, because you know Rubio wants this out, and it could be his road to taking the office in the election after this one coming up, to say, you know, I secured airspace safety and found some form of life that no one else would tell you about. It's a pretty good running message.
Bill Clinton had an interest, and he had Hillary in with him at the time.
Yes.
And they had, you know, Podesta and stuff there. It was back in the 90s, but you know, if you said now that they were coming in, people would get excited, but it never happened then. So I think it's, you've got to sit on the fence with, you know, what would actually happen.
I think the only possible president that could have revealed something, and this is literally just, it didn't happen, so we'll never know, but it was thought that Hillary was being tipped to be the UAP disclosure president. And in that run-up with TTSA, sorry, to the Stars Academy of Arts and Science, Tom DeLonge, Podesta, all that stuff. Supposedly she was going to come out swinging and tell us everything. She's not said anything after the fact, though, so we just don't know.
Yeah. Matt Laszlo says to Burchett, do you think it's because they don't know that the people presenting this to you, at least like you say, Dan, quote-unquote the government, but the folks who are presenting this to you, plausible deniability? And Burchett says, yeah, he agrees. He thinks that's part of the compartmentalization. Public hearings hopefully still on for this year. Burchett says he hopes it's folks from the scientific community. He feels they're our best hope to push this forward. So whether that is whistleblowers coming forward involved in the science behind this, or it's your folks like Gary Nolan and Co., the Sol Foundation, whether it's SCU, the Galileo Project, all these different avenues of attack, there's a growing and burgeoning scientific community and involvement in the UFO UAP subject, which I think are pretty good candidates for pushing this forward. I do think still, though, that we could use those hearings having some, and this is something the Danny Sheehan interview, if anyone's listened to it yet, it's available on the Early Access stuff and it's coming out soon. We go into about the whistleblowers and what the background really need to be and what sort of statements could we realistically hear publicly and in the background from these folks. Dan, I've got a question for you. So politically, it seems that the doors for this are becoming increasingly harder to open. If you look back over the last year or two, from Gillibrand, you know, starting a little bit of a something, to the Brian Moultrie kind of deposition and floundering, and then the UAP hearing with Grush, Fravor and Graves, it seemed like there was a lot of opportunity. It seems like a lot of those opportunities are kind of slowly being snuffed out, or at least the doors are being slammed in people's faces. Where do you kind of sit where things are just now?
I'm kind of getting uneasy with it, to be honest. In previous years, we've had this passage of legislation going through very quietly, and there wasn't much noise about it. Stuff got through, you know, it was edited over the year and changed very much like the UAP Disclosure Act last year that didn't pass. But that was a really good example of suddenly we've got a lot of attention and suddenly the thing that we all want goes away. Whether it was right or wrong to kind of make it go away, I'm not commenting on. But more attention brought more, you know, critique of what it was and where the money should be spent on it and so on and so forth. And I think politicians, you know, we've got a bunch of wars happening and their attention is elsewhere. But there's always other stuff going on and they still had time for UAP a few years back. So part of me thinks that their interest is waning, or at least their willingness to put themselves in the public spotlight regarding this issue is kind of waning. We're still hearing that Chuck Schumer is being briefed and is helping with the kind of eminent domain stuff for a, you know, UAP Disclosure Act redux this year in the NDAA. But it remains to be seen how hard that's going to be pushed. You know, Chuck didn't speak out until it failed last year. Whereas maybe if he spoke out before and actually kind of tried to rally the troops, so to speak, maybe more people would have come to its support. But he didn't. So I'm hoping they take a different tack this year and they get a few more people from both sides of the aisle on board, because this is a bipartisan issue. And right now, I feel like it's kind of becoming a Republican and House issue. And we just kind of could do with broadening it out and getting a bit more attention. I know Lester Nair, with the UAP caucus, a different UAP caucus now, this is a public organization and a website, yeah, and things like that. He's been putting together with a bunch of other people, Mo and stuff, such brief impacts for senators and going into their office and talking to them and trying to get them involved. So I'm hoping that this kind of boots on the ground, really professional, clean, you know, nice approach is going to kind of catch a few people with honey, you know?
Yeah, I think maybe one of the big differences, to be fair, is the politicians had time for it a year or 2 years ago. We're now in the election year and things go on the back burner. What is an important subject for us isn't necessarily for them. And you can imagine, yeah, if they did even have a huge interest in it, just say a Burchett, he's sitting at his desk and he's trying to get stuff done with the UAP issue and he's been forced from other corners. You have to deal with this. You have to deal with this. You have to deal with this. And that's going to be happening at every level up the food, yeah, food chain in those areas. So I get why the election's the big thing.
Have you had a change of heart on the whether it's going to be spoken about in the elections?
No, it won't.
I remember last time I asked you that, I said, I kind of think it might be, and I'm kind of on your side now. Like, I've just shifted. I don't think it will come up.
I think I said, and the beauty of social media and the internet in this format is people can go and find it. I think I said, if it is raised, it'll be a joke question again. I don't think it'll be raised in any real serious way, if at all.
Maybe Will Smith will do Men in Black with some aliens on stage again. Who knows?
Yeah. slap someone in the face again live on TV. So I think this is essentially things are a lot of politicians are being stonewalled here and doors are getting slammed in faces. This is where I think law, due process, all that kind of stuff just goes out the window. It's one thing And I know we've got friends and colleagues I've spoke to, and we're not American, so I don't like to speak for anyone's processes. But I think this goes worldwide. Just because you have a process that should be followed doesn't mean it's going to be, especially for something this highly secretive. It just isn't. It just doesn't happen. I don't believe that to be the case for any country. So let me just read a quick listener thought on this one from Gnosis. He says, so the Arrow skiff, it sounds like Congress is disappointed, which is good news. I was worried it would be middling, giving Congress just enough to quell concerns and hope they ease off the topic. But it seems like this has added fuel to the fire. Arrow's motives are still not clear, and until we get another report or two released, it's hard to see their plan to survive long term. Interesting point.
Yeah, definitely. That survival long term for Arrow, that's a big question mark for me right now. Especially after reading, well, we're going to cover it, so I'll get into it when we cover the thing.
Let's go on to it, because like I say, I think the news does trickle into each other and they're really all does. Pretty relevant. We could have even went into the Grush, Mel and Kirkpatrick stuff, but the Kona Blue files, Dan, my notes for this are all over the place. They dropped a couple of days ago now, didn't they, online 2 or 3 days
ago? Yes, 16th they dropped, and they were meant to be declassified in 2036, around the same date. So we got them earlier than we were meant to. These are essentially where Arrow speaks about Kona Blue in their report and what they found with it. This is their evidence for what they said.
Cool. So Kona Blue, pretty cool looking set of documents, especially it had a pretty cool cover on it, Dan. It wasn't just the usual black and white nonsense. Dropped by Beach Arrow, party. Which, yeah, absolutely. Dropped by Arrow, which I think is a talking point in itself. It was a proposed program within the Department of Homeland Security aimed at reverse engineering, essentially extraterrestrial technology. But I think it's important to say for anyone who's listening to this and going, what? Well, I've not heard of this. It was never fully implemented or put into practice. It was a suggestion. And from what I'm reading, and I'll probably get this badly wrong, it's a little bit like you going to your boss and work and saying, I've got this project, I've got a great idea. And they say, yeah, put together a PowerPoint for it. You do it and nothing comes of it. That's kind of what it was. Is that right?
Yeah, I would say that's the kind of concise way to sum it up. There are a few kind of subtleties throughout it where it looks like the boss has kind of pre-approved the program. And then it's only when the boss's boss has got involved, they've said no and shut it down.
Yeah.
There are a few other little things with it. But yeah, that's basically it. This whole thing's a proposal. So when you read the document and you see that it says, we believe there is technology within the United States government that is exotic or from an AAV, which is an advanced aerial vehicle. Yeah, advanced, anomalous. This was the phrasing used for UFOs around this time. So this is what they're talking about. But AAV, a drone would have been called an AAV around this time frame as well. So, they're playing inside baseball a little bit here. And we can look at this document two ways. Either we can see that Lakatsky and all the guys that worked on ORSAP, this is their program trying to grow up. And the way that they've spoken about this program is that they were kind of trying to get inside the real programs. So you can look at this document as a proposal for a backwards psyop into the United States government, kind of a wolf in sheep's clothing to hide amongst them, get the good stuff and get it out to us. The other way we can look at it is that, when you read through this and it says they want to collect data, they want to analyze, oral histories, they want to collect evidence, they want to get education kind of going, and interview people that have had experiences and, be a central repository. Sounds a lot like Arrow. And they also say that they will play, they'll play properly and they'll classify this and keep it secret. So it kind of rubbed me up a little bit the wrong way reading it, because this is Bigelow once again, after having a whole bunch of taxpayer money, hiding the reports that he generated out of this taxpayer money. And now he's doing it again and proposing he wants even more, 70 to 90 million to do this project, but he wants to keep it secret. So I read it and I was just a bit disappointed. There are some really intriguing aspects to what they want to do, but ultimately it's, we want to keep this secret again,
there's, I know you mentioned Bigelow as one of the names, and the funding on there is marked at various different places, which is interesting. That also brings up the ATIP slash OSAP funding that's yes. mentioned on there, the $10 million, which was in a further $12 million for Senator Harry Reid and Senator Inouye are both named on there. Like I say, ATIP's named on there. We don't know exactly who put it together, though, do we? Because I think Danny Sheehan mentioned on an interview just the other day that he calls them the assumptions on it. This isn't a list of here's loads of evidence for stuff we have found. It basically assumes, you know, extraterrestrial vehicles, yes. extraterrestrial exotic technologies. It's put forward with, we're going on the basis this stuff exists. It doesn't list the evidence of that. So that's important to point out. Danny Sheehan said he knows who put forward the assumptions and the proposal, but he can't say who, but to him it makes sense why the information's there. So if he knows the individual behind it, I mean, but for you, Dan, does that sound like it's a Lakatsky, like it's an Elizondo, or someone else?
I mean, Lakatsky ran the OSAP program, so it makes sense for him to be involved in this document. Danny's right, we have no name on it, so it's impossible for me to say who wrote it. But there are a few clues that it came from a certain group. And like you said, the assumption is, there's even a really nice quote on page 47 where it says, an SAP is being proposed, as we have been informed that there is a body of previous work held by other entities that require an SAP level classification to access it. I.e., we've been told something and we need this classification to be able to see it. Give us the classification so we can see it. That's what this is, really.
Yeah, a couple of things within it. And I think these are, to be fair, and there's a few various quotes kicking about online as well. The program never went into happening. It was terminated essentially before it got going, as for a few reasons, including nothing was ever recovered, allegedly. It was only assumed these materials or anything existed, like I mentioned before. It was aimed, and I think you were right, Dan, to say, and I like that you've done what I usually do, that it could be looked at a few different ways. We don't know. It could be pure disinformation, big psyop, but, you know, is what it is. They were looking for this to be an effort towards some kind of transparency. The documents associated with Kona Blue have all been declassified and released to the public through Arrow. That, I think, like I mentioned before, seems a little bit suspect in itself, because Arrow doesn't seem like it was being the most transparent. Yet here you go, here's a lovely set of documents for you that we have found as part of our investigations. These were declassified, Dan, 2 days after David Grush testified to Congress in July. Why do you not think that this was included within Arrow's report that they just released?
So this would be in kind of supplemental material. When we had the NDAA go through last year, and it basically dictated that, kindly suggested, dictated is the wrong word to use in a democracy, I guess, that everything be held by the National Archives. This is the kind of document that go to the National Archives. When the Arrow report came out, a lot of us were like, well, where's your workings? We want to see the data that led to you to these assumptions. This is that, but really it should have come out at the same time and been accessible so that we could all check the workings and see. And, you know, it's essentially what peer review is, right? A lot of us are looking at some of the claims, seeing that they've got some claims wrong, like, you know, how they describe Roswell and various other, you know, really important things that show like a lot of assumptions on part of Arrow. And they all kind of lead to the idea that, you know, someone's not being entirely truthful here with what's kind of being talked about. But this one was essentially Dr. Sean Kirkpatrick, the head of Arrow at the time, said that he spoke to a number of individuals who came in and told him that Kona Blue was the UFO legacy secure access program that studied this stuff. And knowing that it was actually this and it never went ahead, he was able to say, well, that's clearly nonsense. And, you know, these guys have just gotten a story and are repeating it and so on and so forth. Personally, as you know, as iffy as Arrow has been for me, I think that's a good thing to do. You know, if someone could come in and they're essentially telling you a code word that proves that what they're saying isn't, you know, the golden goose or the golden egg, then yeah, you can filter that out. This is what we want, right? Take the normal stuff out, take the hearsay out, and let's get down to brass tacks. It's just whether they're being honest about, you know, the rest of it is the question when so much is wrong in their report.
Do you think this is just a bit of, what's the word, not publicity, but face saving from Arrow, or is it just a way of basically saying, look, here is some of the working, you know, I know we've came to the conclusion there's nothing to this, but here's another one of these things we found. We've declassified it. It was just all hearsay and assumptions. I think for folks like us, let's be fair, we're really interested in hearsay and assumptions because it makes up part of the mythology and the subject just as part of it. So we like to dig into stuff like this, and you can see and I mean this in the nicest way, the usual suspects on, you know, Twitter, X and stuff are picking through it and finding really interesting quotes. They're finding interesting excerpts. They're finding, you know, like those kind of, A-Tip was mentioned, Lou Elizondo was mentioned, Bigelow was mentioned, that it justifies maybe some things that others have argued that either didn't happen. But it's just another vagueness released into the UFO subject. As much as some of it sounds pretty interesting.
For example, they say temporal translation, which is like time skipping and dematerialization and rematerialization, that kind of stuff. There's no evidence here.
I was going to say, I was like, because time travel almost mentioned, the consciousness stuff's mentioned, remote viewing is called remote sensing. All that kind of stuff's in there. The UFO topic is in this presentation.
Yes. Sorry, I was reading my notes and the last sentence I missed.
I was like, did you disconnect there for a second? Just yes.
No, it's just literally just a brain wipe.
Dan's now an AI and it just flickered there for a second when it just went, yes, absolutely.
You can tell I have six fingers on each hand now.
Yeah, but no, so it's an interesting release, interesting document. I think you have to read behind this. For the skeptics, I think this just adds more fuel to the fire of this is all just assumptions, not based on any evidence and secondhand stories passed down. And that's not totally unfair given what is presented here. But for folks like us, people listening, people watching, interested in the UFO topic, you're probably looking at this going, this was something that had real basis to it. And I suppose, though, without knowing the names of who put this together and maybe some of the context behind it, and those individuals coming out now, some 10, 12 years later, whatever it might be, and saying, actually, here's some of the reasoning. I think this is the kind of stuff I'd like to see Ross Coulthart following up with, George Knapp following up with, James Fox, Jeremy Corbell. These are folks who will probably know. If Danny Sheehan knows, they will know who's involved in it.
Yeah.
Can they speak to them? And I imagine, and this is what I say, Dan, that over the next few days, you'll probably find more comes out around this. Some more detail comes out around it. I'd like to see some of those folks making some interesting statements off the back of it to really help some of us dig into it a little bit more. I had a couple of quotes from it as well. Make a point. Yeah, go on.
I was just going to add, like, to understand this document, at the very least, you have to read Lou Elizondo's DOD IG complaint. You have to read Skinwalkers of the Pentagon. You have to read, I forget the more current name. Is the book behind you, Knapp and Kelleher's newer book?
Inside the U.S. Government's Covert UFO Program, Initial Revelations.
Nice. Memorable title there. That's why I can remember it.
Yeah, rolls off the tongue.
So yeah, you kind of have to read all of this material and put the puzzle pieces together, and you'll see the same names pop up through them. You'll see them kind of fill out details of conversations that are alluded to in this document, and that will give you kind of a complete picture of what's happening. One of these documents on their own is not going to kind of give you everything, and it kind of becomes a bit choose your own adventure when you don't do that and you just kind of take these statements at face value from either side of the debate, you know?
100%, yeah, that's it. A couple of questions, Dan, from folks, thoughts, opinions. I've not read through all these, so if any swears come out here, it's because I've not read them properly in advance. I just loaded up the pages. I was being really lazy with this one. A couple from YouTube first off. Here's Johnny says, Andy, brackets and Dan, do you think that Congress will ever get the truth from the DOD? I'm going to say a big no. No matter what verbal evidence is brought into light by extremely credible people, it's going to take actual physical evidence to shake the average Joe from the skepticism tree. We pin our hopes on these meetings and hearings, and we will all know what the outcome will be, but yet we still have hope. Why? This is probably related to the first one as well. Dan, I don't think they're going to get the DOD coming out and saying, okay, hands up, here's the good stuff, unless their hands are forced by whistleblowers and whatnot.
Yeah, I would agree. And at this point, if the DOD, you know, if you think about it, if the DOD know that there's something in their past where they touched this stuff and they did do what everyone is accusing them of, they're not going to tell us that. They're going to sweep it under the rug. They're going to protect their own. They're going to move them departments like they did with Gary Reed and just give them lesser jobs and whatever. And they're going to be happy that, you know, the European Space Agency announces it and they can go, oh, yeah, no, we didn't. No, we've never seen that before. What a crazy bit of news, you know? They're just going to pretend that it's the first time. I think they'd be very happy if that was to happen.
They'd be like, oh, we don't have alien stuff. We've got some future human tech, though. But you never asked about that.
Exactly. So, and really, you know, what do we get out of them kind of telling us? Like, for you and I, we'd love to see them go back to, you know, is Phoenix Light real? Is Roswell real? Is all of this other stuff real? But when history looks back, it's just going to see at this in this year, we found out we're not alone. And that's it. It's just going to be a line in a history book, and it'll change us a lot. But no one but, you know, you or I, or, you know, post-disclosure, Vinny, Graham, Knapp, Marla, like, we're all digging into the minutiae of it, but most people are not going to care.
No, they won't care about, you know, oh, it was covered up at Roswell, so let's bring these people to justice and jail their grandkids. Jacob P. says, while I'm glad the documents are released, it seems like Arrow have ulterior motives behind it. They'll probably use it to disparage folks like Grush and Elizondo. That may be something that we'll come back to, Dan, given the next news topic. Stephanie says, the teleportation of matter through space and time is a recurring feature of the phenomenon that definitely deserves further investigation. It would be simply great if such technology could be used for humanitarian purposes to retrospectively and proactively prevent disasters and save people from death. However, any misuse of this technology as a weapon must be decisively countered. We talked about that, Dan, ages ago, didn't we? On like a What If type episode. And how this idea that any of this technology coming out would change humanity overnight, and we were like, I don't think it will. The really, really good book, After Disclosure, AD, from Richard Dolan, co-authored by Bryce Abel, one for the Discord chat there.
Did Bryce write that with him?
He did. I think it's eight minutes into the No Need to Know, he mentions that. But yeah, really, really good book, and I'd love to see them follow up with some extra chapters.
Yeah, definitely. Really.
But they mention that kind of stuff as well, and I've had guests on recently, Dan, and others have spoken about when this stuff comes out, it's not going to be the Jetsons, flying cars, Star Trek tricorders, and medicine healing everyone overnight. It's going to be insurance companies giving you abduction insurance and lawsuits going back to military personnel injured by UAP and exposed to radiation. That's going to be the real life side of it. You know, Elon Musk and Tesla buying up some of the rights to this stuff and selling it for a profit. Yeah, your car's battery will never need replaced and it'll be electric, but you're going to pay for it. So that's probably the realistic side of what would happen more so than anything else. So yeah, but again, that kind of stuff is talked about within it. Deravas says, Kona Blue is just more words on paper. It will convince no one of something extraordinary who doesn't already believe in the extraordinary, but the way it is written and the words that are used can solidify suspicions the same way the wording of the Schumer Amendment did. And finally, Matthias Cruz says, Kona Blue is maybe a distraction to congressmen to ask the wrong questions. Thoughts on those, Dan?
Really interesting. You know, I love the idea that, love is the wrong word, but being aware, I think, that the planet isn't the same for all of us is really important. You know, if they were to bring this technology out, you and I would hear it. We're plugged in. There are plenty of people that wouldn't even know about the announcement, and it would take so much time for it to kind of trickle down. You know, take AI, for example, generative AI. We talk about it often. You know, if you're online, you kind of come across it. But many people don't know it exists. You know, my mum certainly doesn't. It blows her mind. I only showed her last week. It's been around for like a year and a half. Or even how to begin using it, right? I spoke to somebody who watched Three Body Problem, and they were amazed by the particle accelerator. And that Netflix show for them was the moment that they learned the particle accelerators were real things.
Real thing.
And not just random things in sci-fi. And blew my mind. But, you know, we have to be aware of that. Like, not everyone's on the same page, even when we think of things like, you know, smartphones.
Do you think someone should be embarrassed that they never knew the Large Hadron Collider was a real thing?
No, not at all.
Okay, like, so Susan gets away with one then. That's fine.
Yes, absolutely. I'm a massive nerd, so I'm like, oh, I know, and I learned and I watched the opening and, you know, so on and so forth. But yeah. Susan be like, yeah, I was busy. I had a better day than you. I went out and touched grass, you know?
yeah, pretty much, yeah. But a few more comments. These are from the Patreon folks. David Fairclough said it was good that it vindicated Luis Elizondo. Dates and amounts of money matched with the note from Harry Reid. Christian Morales says, all I'll say is I felt like it was a gamble on the part of Sean Kirkpatrick by declassifying information that one learns about in the end stages of, let's call it, the UFO rabbit hole. If there's five gears in a car, then that's the fifth gear. It's a gamble because it can create interest but also turn people off as woo-woo stuff. Your typical intelligent, rational-minded person might think this sounds ridiculous and could stigmatize and isolate the UFO community. Probably echoes what you've just said there, Dan, that, you know, some folks just won't be interested, others will. And I think you can see already, just from the last couple of days of online interaction from folks, there's been a lot of arguing back and forward and people using elements of it to drive their narrative.
Yeah.
In the same way someone uses a religious text, i.e. a Bible, to quote it and interpret in their own way. That's sure. kind of what happens with this kind of stuff.
Peter Earnshaw
says, unfortunate, I sense the hand of Richard Doty or his successor in role. Sean Hancock said, it's interesting, either a calculated release meant to stigmatise the UFO topic or a step towards disclosure. I can see it being used to perpetuate Kirkpatrick's narrative that it's just a few UFO nuts misleading Congress. I don't think that's unfair, just from what we said before. Not that that's the case, but I think sure. that could be a reason. On the other hand, maybe, just maybe, it's a step towards disclosure. And final comment, Dan, thanks to everyone who did submit stuff. I'm puzzled by the role, and this is from Max, I'm puzzled by the role of somewhat woo, Putoff, Ingo Swan, Bigelow Nexus. It seems clear Kirkpatrick wants to paint this cohort as delusional. Hard to parse the layers of mis and disinformation, the motives of various players, and how much access any of them have to various SAPs. I think it's quite possible that there are secret programs in possession of non-human tech, and simultaneously, those programs are so siloed and insular that people in and adjacent to them have created a lot of lore that is not especially evidence-based. Thank you, Max. Thank you, everyone. My final comment on this, Dan, is I feel these Kona Blue documents are really interesting. I've no reason to believe they aren't genuine or have the best intentions. But for me, these are the equivalent of the Go Fast video or the Gimbal video. You know, where we have said, we've always kind of said, they're interesting to us, but boring enough to be released. And there's enough behind it that they can't be backed up without more being released that we're not going to get anytime soon. Where do you sit on them?
I'm the same. You know, there was one comment there that said they vindicated Lou. And, you know, personally, I believe Lou. I believe what Lou did and so on and so forth. I don't think these documents vindicate anybody because it's a proposal. If it's being written by the OSAP guys, it's the same guys kind of eating their own tail. It's the UFO Ouroboros. You know, the rumor goes out, it comes back around, it's stated, and that's taken as corroboration. And we see this all the time in like news articles about UFOs and things like that. We've got to be careful kind of saying that this, you know, vindicates people. The one thing that I did like about it was all these little tidbits that clued us into things that we hadn't heard before that Bigelow and team were doing. One of the things that I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what people find is there are two other study locations mentioned that aren't Skinwalker Ranch, one in the San Juan Valley in Colorado and Marley's Woods in Missouri. What's there? Let us know. I'm going to do some Googling and try and find out.
Awesome, yeah. And I think, again, what trickles into that, we've mentioned David Grush, we've mentioned Sean Kirkpatrick, and news that came out just today as we record this, there were some FOIA documents, so Freedom of Information Act requested documents revealing Arrow's authorised and repeated attempts to engage with David Grush. Now, that's the headline John Greenwald at the Black Vaults put out there. There's some interesting stuff around this. Dan, there has been a hell of a lot of dissection and debate already around the contents of what was released. So this is a FOIA request John Greenwald put in to the US government back on November 2nd, he says. Now, that's a hell of a quick turnaround for some of the stuff he doesn't get for 15 years. So
yeah.
John's clearly got a friend there sending him this stuff quickly, or they're at least being selective on what they send him quickly. But he's done a really good job of putting this all on his website. I'll put the link in the description. Some of the main things for me here, Dan, I'm just going to go back to my notes. I was on the website. There were some big talking points I've seen online, because there are interactions and email exchanges and text message exchanges between Chris Mellon, Sean Kirkpatrick, and emails from David Grush to Arrow back and forward. And one of the big things I saw appear from this was, this shows that David Grush, and I'm not saying this, this was the context online, David Grush lied, saying he'd never spoken to Arrow, and this shows that he did speak to Arrow. From what I can gather in the last couple of hours, just looking at it, the conversations between Grush and Arrow happened after David Grush had said in those hearings that he hadn't been in contact with them. I would also imagine at that time, if any contact was being mooted or talked about, David Grush's lawyer, Charles McCullough III, who it was at the time, would have been recommending he doesn't speak to Arrow. All we have heard about Arrow now for the last couple of years is that people have been, circumventing Arrow. They've been going round the process because they have not trusted nor wanted to speak to Arrow about any of their claims, about their processes, about what they want to talk about. They'd rather go direct to folks in Congress or folks higher up. We have heard from folks who did speak to Arrow. Who was it released? Was it Robert Salas released part of his audio recording to Arrow?
Yeah, Robert Salas.
But it was like, he felt it was really poorly done. It wasn't very well orchestrated. Just a list of questions being asked over the phone. So in part, I can see why David Grush wouldn't have wanted to go to Arrow anyway. And it seems like that was also, I believe, cleared up. Chris Sharp at Liberation Times had an article out in January where David Grush had confirmed to him that he had, after the fact, then spoken to Arrow to try and arrange something, but he didn't trust essentially how they were going to handle classified information and his sources, his methods. So a complete lack of trust in the Arrow process, which, let's be fair, we have heard from numerous different people over the course of the last year. So I don't think any of that should be surprising. So for me, I can't see David Grush has lied. I can see David Grush's comments were backed up in January. And I don't know if some folks just jumped on the headlines a little bit with this one, that David Grush had no contact with Arrow when he clearly had. Is that right?
It's funny because in the document itself, even Sean Kirkpatrick, head of Arrow at the time, contradicts himself. He says, we didn't... Let me read the quote, just so I'm using Sean's words and not kind of paraphrasing. Sean says, I've had a continued conversation with him, meaning Grush, for years. And then literally two lines later says, I haven't spoken to him for years. And it's like, well, which is it?
And is he texting Chris Mellon at this point?
He's texting back and forth with Chris Mellon.
Yeah.
And it's really confusing to read those two statements really quickly after each other. And there's a few other kind of contradictions in there as well, where Kirkpatrick doesn't want to give his contact info to Grush or his lawyer so they can get in touch. So you can see that it's not quite as clear cut. You can't say Grush refused to talk to them because they did.
Yep.
He was asking for contact info. Mellon was asking for contact info and Sean refused it, which is insanity. He's not trying to kind of pave the way for Grush to speak to them. He also says that he already knows everything that Grush was briefed on and had access to, and he has greater access. So it seems that there's some assumptions being made about Grush's story before Grush has even spoken to them. There's a little allusion as well with some of the anonymous text messages that Arrow's been trying to set up some kind of back channels between the committees and Arrow to say, hey, if someone comes to you, you let us know and we'll come and listen and sit in with them talking to you instead of us. Which, again, isn't kind of fair. That's not what it is. If the people don't want to talk to Arrow, they don't want to talk to Arrow. Grush was very distinct in what his request was. And I'm just going to read this. It's a little wall of texty, but I'm just going to read it because this is Grush saying, way back when Arrow said that, we're going to organize a meeting with you, and then that he didn't show up. Arrow didn't address his asks. They didn't give him what he wanted to show up, and he didn't show up. That's kind of logical, right? So Gresham, this was on the 14th of November, 2023, which some, you know, eagle-eyed people might realize that's the anniversary of the Tic Tacs item with the Nimitz. Nice touch. Don't know if that was intentional. Maybe Gresh or brought a cake or something. But he says, with due respect, I need answers to my questions before I'll be comfortable meeting. Please provide responses so that we can hopefully move forward and schedule a meeting. The law may grant your office a need to know, but it does not establish policies and procedures with various data owners. I have managed multi-compartmented activities throughout my entire career and have multiple DCSA security professional certifications. I did not ask these questions for mere curiosity. He's losing his rag there a bit with him, getting a bit annoyed with Sean Kirkpatrick because Sean Kirkpatrick clearly isn't giving him what he needs. And this kind of alludes to a little bit of like mucking around in terms of messages. It's clear that, you know, for whatever reason, they just haven't been able to get on the same page here. For Sean to say that Grush is refusing to come in is just not true. For Grush to say that he's not being got in touch with is just not true. There's a conversation here, and just the requirements for the conversation to happen have not been met. That's all.
No, I'm glad you've said that, because I think I try on this all times as much as possible to let people make up their own mind, and people always should. And I think it's just not just the UFO topic, but it happens a lot within the UFO topic that people will jump on the slightest little indiscretion to go, ha, they're lying, they've made it up, when, like you say, the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. Arrow did try to reach out, so it wasn't like they hadn't been in contact. However, it wasn't that David Grush was ignoring them completely. There were conversations going on. No doubt other folks are involved who aren't cited in this material. And the truth is probably somewhere in the murky middle. I'm always going to lean the same as you, Dan, more towards David Grush, because ultimately he sat in front of Congress and said what he said.
We've seen him take an oath, right?
Yep. And like you say, no doubt if you sat Kirkpatrick and Grush face to face, under oath, for whatever reason, just to have that little almost childish conversation around, you know, did you fall out? Are you telling the truth? They'd end up saying, no, do you know what? I didn't mean that. What I meant was that I hadn't heard from an official back channel, blah, 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 blah. What we're seeing here is the same way if me and you argued over Twitter, Dan, over a 3-day period, you know, on various different threads, you're going to lose context, you're going to lose nuances, what was going on at the time, your mood changes in the day. These guys were texting each other and also emailing at separate times. So it's just all a bit of a mess anyway, but that's just life. And I think people, if they want to jump on this and try and find something that probably isn't there, they'll find it. I think it's just an interesting exchange. Ultimately, the only thing that comes out of it for me is that there were conversations going on, I think, that anyone would have expected, and that David Grush wasn't avoiding Arrow. Arrow maybe weren't going out of their way to get Grush, but, you know, there was contact made at some point. So yeah, I don't think there was a whole lot more to it, to be honest.
The two things that I would mention from it, it was specified that Grush has bad blood with Sean going back to 2015. This is Sean Kirkpatrick, head of Arrow again. So something happened in 2015 we're not privy to. We don't know. Could have trampled on his favorite flower or something. You know, like clearly there's some animosity there. The tone in the conversations was a little less professional than I was hoping. But Sean Kirkpatrick also said this at one point. If Grush's lawyer successfully makes the case that we aren't lawfully empowered, there will be a lot less appetite to keep Arrow, which alludes to what we've already touched on here. And Sean's essentially saying from within Arrow here, what's even our job if people aren't going to talk to us? And it feels a little bit like tomfoolery. I don't think Sean should be thinking like that. I think he should just be focused forward, look at the cases that he is given, instead of saying, maybe you should shut this down because David Grush doesn't want to talk to us.
I don't think it's unfair to say from this point, you know, hindsight being 2020, Sean Kirkpatrick didn't enjoy his role. He didn't want to do that role.
I'd agree.
I don't think it's as conspiratorial as many folks make out. Did he have a bias? Probably, in the negative towards the UFO subject, but I just don't think he wanted to be there. And I think he was asked maybe to do something that was going to be short term. Ultimately, it was relatively short term, and he'll get moved on to something much nicer where he has done, you know, contractor work afterwards and be looked after. So, but who knows? And that's the kind of stuff that we won't probably find out for many years, and unless it comes in one of these FOIA document requests. But well done to John Greenwald getting that stuff up and out.
Yeah, it's a good get. Thank you. He's great at the alt FOIA.
Dan, in about a minute, you had a couple of things to mention. Can you fly through?
Yes, I'll go as fast as I can. So you should do like a news kind of beat thing, like beep. Like some music. Beep. So Steven Spielberg, apparently he's working on a new UFO movie confirmed by Variety. Apparently, and this is the quote, Spielberg will likely make his next project a UFO film based on his own original idea. David Koepp is writing the screenplay, sources say. He's written Jurassic Park, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Two ends of the movie spectrum there, so we'll see what comes out of it. But I'm excited. Like, what movie would you want to see from Spielberg?
Yeah, big budget, well produced, it'll look good. And he's got a good record with ET stuff. If we don't include Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull. Like, I say ET stuff, ET was fantastic. So, you know.
It was only the interdimensionals in Indiana Jones that kind of fell down. So stay away from interdimensionals and let's see what we can get.
Stay away from shit movies, ideally. Yeah, but yeah,
that's fair. Execs won't learn that lesson, though. You know, they keep going, oh, people like Barbie, so we'll make more movies about toys. No, people like good movies. There was a great episode of Joe Rogan this week with archaeologist Flint Dibble from Cardiff University, just down the road here. Big props to Cardiff. And Graham Hancock, who people will know as someone that vouches for there being a pre-Ice Age civilization that was kind of worldwide spread and seafaring and so on and so forth. They actually had a debate over the evidence. It was 4.5 hours long. And I won't go too much into what it is because I honestly think people should watch it and make up their own mind. It got a bit handbags for like a half hour. But ultimately, they had a respectful, reasonable conversation about the evidence as to why Graham's idea is so far off base. And I learned a hell of a lot just watching it about how they trace agriculture through seeds and how plants mutate over thousands of years and, you know, how they analyze shipwrecks and core samples and the pollen to kind of get an idea of the environment. And it was really fascinating. So I'd recommend go watch that. I wouldn't say that, you know, there was a winner. I came out of it more intrigued than ever to kind of dive into the data. And even Joe Rogan was convinced on some points as well. So big props to those two for just going on and having a good conversation instead of just sniping each other over Twitter. There was a excellent TTSA Talks episode, episode 13, where Tom DeLonge and Jim Samivan picked up where they left off before. They spoke about things like egregores and the phenomenon feeding on us, the airship mystery, things like that. And Tom presented his new model of the phenomena, which was very similar to his old model, to be honest. It's kind of a bit new cokey, but ultimately, you know, that kind of cargo cult idea that something interdimensional is coming here and it kind of wants to use us for something. Samivan mentions Charles Fort in the Book of the Damned. I've mentioned him before because he's kind of the first guy who said, you know what, science is going to look at this stuff. I'm going to. It happens in the world, therefore it's scientific to look at it, therefore, you know, I'll look at it. So that's Charles Fort is literally where, if anyone's ever heard the name, you know, the 40 times or 40 subjects, that's where it comes from a scientist that was willing to look in good faith at the weirder stuff in the world, which I, you know, thought was great. Big breath, last one. So in about a month, we have a new book coming out from AJ Hartley and Tom DeLonge called Trinity, that is supposed to be another piece of the UFO puzzle. Really looking forward to that. But also we got an inkling that the third volume of God's Man and War is finally coming out this year. Apparently it's going to come out 17th of September, but there's a bit of leeway on that, according to Peter Lavender. Props to Stephen AP Wales on Twitter for breaking this as well. I'm just going to read the blurb for the book just so that people can kind of get an idea of what it's going to be about. With gods, we ask the first question. Does our religion and our science give evidence that human civilization is a cargo cult triggered by contact sometime in prehistory? With man, the second book, we ask the second question. If we apply what we know of science, of physics, biology, and anthropology to the phenomena, how will that change our science as well as our understanding of the alien? With war, we ask the final question. Are the first two questions being addressed or perhaps have already been answered by our political, military, scientific, and intelligence leaders? The United States, Russia, China, and other countries around the world have experienced contact with the phenomena, as we will discover in war. Americans demand that their leaders reveal what they know. They demand disclosure. But what do our allies and our enemies know about the phenomena, and why have they not already disclosed? why is this an international issue and not just an American one? And what does that tell us about the phenomena? We will discover how studies of the phenomena in other countries, as well as in the US, are plagued by events that have no rational explanation. We will see what should be scientific bleeds over into what should be religion, and how the fusion of both stimulates studies in consciousness, and how this aspect of a field that should be mundane has led to madness and suicide in some of our most prominent researchers and mysterious deaths in others. Will there be an alien invasion? Has it already happened? Are the governments of the world prepared for contact with the government of the sky? Are we ready for war? That was longer than I thought, but that's the blurb for the book. It sounds really interesting, just as interesting as the first two, and I'm excited for it.
Absolutely. Nice little roundup at the end there. Thank you very much.
There you go. I can breathe now.
Yes. Folks, Dan, thank you for your time. The interview with Danny Sheehan will be out in the next couple of days. I've got another couple of guests, confirmed dates today, so I'll put that out soon once I've got those. And I just want to say one thing, Dan, after we done the breakdown on the Nazca mummy stuff days ago, really emotive comments, emotive subject for lots and lots of people. I was surprised. But people shouldn't feel bad about having a different opinion to anyone, including me, Dan, or anyone else. Don't ever apologize in the comments for disagreeing with our thoughts on something, because ultimately none of us know. And if you can agree, you can disagree and debate with each other, all good. I'm still of the opinion, you know, I hope something comes of it. I reached out to the law firm who are representing the three American scientists who have got on board. Still hoping to hear back. They got back to me, but it's going to be hard to get interviews, basically. It seems like a long game from what those scientists said. So, but yeah, I loved everyone's comments. I do read through them. I just don't always get a chance to reply. So, yeah, don't feel bad about having a different opinion, because in this subject, we could all be right, could all be wrong. We're not all going to be right, but we very much all could be wrong.
Imagine if we were all right, and we could all have our own adventure. It would be interesting, but the law
really
firm,
confusing.
It would be very confusing, right?
I almost think it'd be better if we were all wrong and it was something totally different.
Which is likely.
Is it Family Guy where like Jesus comes back and he comes down and it's like, oh, who was right? Oh, it was the Buddhists. And it's like the Buddhists were correct. Something like that.
I think Family Guy in South Park, it was the Mormons, wasn't it? It was the Mormons. And they're like,
There's almost like, that's who was correct. That's it. And that could be it. That could be the UFO subject in a nutshell, that something else totally different comes out and we were all completely wrong. So until next time, Dan, thank you very much.
Thank you. And thanks everyone for listening.
We can all be wrong again together next time. That is all for this episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. Don't forget to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. Apple and Spotify do make a huge difference to the algorithm. If you're checking the show out on YouTube, please don't forget to like and leave a comment on here as well. Any sharing you do is very much appreciated on any social media platform. And finally, you can listen to shows ad-free and sponsor-free in their glorious full versions by subscribing for less than the price of a coffee on Apple, Spotify. Just search That UFO Podcast Premium. YouTube, you can sign up and be a member, or you can do that through patreon.com. Thank you very much for listening, folks.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer. A little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right inside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue.